The shocking terrorist attacks in Paris on November 13th focused world attention on ISIS, the extremist group which claimed responsibility. The well-planned massacre of ordinary Parisians across the city, in restaurants, a stadium, and concert hall, killed 129 and wounded 352, with 99 remaining in critical condition. In a statement released after the carnage, the terrorist group said it had targeted France for its involvement in the bombing campaign against ISIS forces in both Iraq and Syria. The Paris assault came after other recent attacks claimed by ISIS, including two bombings in Beirut that killed 43, the bombing of a Russian airliner over Egypt that took the lives of 224 passengers, and a double suicide bombing in Ankara, Turkey, targeting a Kurdish political rally that killed 97. The French government responded to the murderous attack by invoking a state of emergency, stepping up its bombing campaign against ISIS in Syria, and launching police raids against suspected ISIS-linked terrorists across France. While President Obama has resisted calls to send large numbers of U.S. troops to battle ISIS in Syria, Republican presidential candidates were quick to criticize the president for not escalating America's military campaign, with some demanding a halt to a White House plan to resettle 10,000 Syrian war refugees in the U.S. They were joined by 24 Republican governors who said they would suspend the resettlement of Syrian refugees in their states. Your reporter spoke with Vijay Prashad, the George and Martha Kellner Chair in South Asian History and Professor of International Studies at Trinity College. Here, Professor Prashad discusses the goals of the perpetrators of the Paris massacre and policy options to diminish future cycles of violence.
There is indeed an apocalyptic vision. The magazine, very glossy magazine, produced by ISIS is called Dabiq. Dabiq is a town in Syria, a small town, where there is a kind of legendary idea that that is where the final battle will take place. In the apocalypse indeed will happen. You don't forget that Islam, Judaism, they share this view that there is an end times, that there's an apocalyptic moment. And so this should be familiar to people who are raised in these, as it were, Abrahamic religions, where there is this sort of end time philosophy. So yes, there is a section of ISIS that is indeed, believes in an apocalypse. They want to certainly draw in, troops from the West, and they're going to have, engineer this big battle in Dabiq, and there's the end of the world. There are sections like that. There are also people in ISIS who have politics, who are angry with the dispensation. They want to create room for themselves. They are not necessarily motivated by this apocalyptic vision. You know, they've been frustrated with the government in Iraq. They're frustrated with the government in Syria. So there are people like that, and these are the people that are not programmatically committed to the ideology of ISIS. And if they are squeezed, they would walk away from ISIS. You know, these are the low-hanging fruit. Then there are people who live in Europe who are frustrated with the way the domestic policies in Europe, racism, with poverty among immigrants from Algeria and Morocco. You know, France has the largest population of North Africans, given miserable conditions. Belgium has, one of the poorest areas of Belgium is entirely North African. So the point I'm making is there are many different motivations for acts of terror. We have to understand them for their multiplicity, and you have to forensically go after different populations based on, what kind of drivers they have. If there are those who are driven by an apocalyptic vision, it's very unlikely to be able to convince them of anything. But the vast bulk of people who join terrorist organizations aren't hardened ideological militants. They have all kinds of opportunistic ideas that draw them to terrorism. And those are the people that need to be politically appealed to. The United States and its allies have been bombing ISIS since August of 2014. And apart from one example, there have been almost no gains. I mean, ISIS works like a pendulum. It doesn't sit in one place. It's 10,000 or so fighters always on the move. And unfortunately, that's exactly what the French have now ramped up and bombing more in Raqqa. Very unlikely it's going to have an effect.
Well, Vijay Prashad, just a final question here. Regional and world powers involved in the Syrian civil war have been working at cross purposes for a number of years now. Do you think these recent terrorist attacks targeting Russia and France and other regional centers of power may offer some hope for these countries to come together to try and address and end the war in Syria and thereby go at the root of the problem when it comes to ISIS and the havoc they've wreaked across the globe?
Scott, this is a very important question. You know, Obama and Putin had a 35-minute meeting where they sat at the margins of the G20 summit, actually in the reception area in Antalya, Turkey, and they spent 35 minutes talking. And what the Russians said after that meeting was that the Obama and Putin agreed broadly on the strategy for Syria. There was disagreement on the tactics. Now, they didn't explain exactly what tactics they were talking about, but this is a slightly positive way forward. You know, I'm not a believer in great powers solving the problems of ordinary people. You know, I would believe ordinary people solve their own problems. But here, Syria is being suffocated. Half the population has been displaced, dropped by more than 10 years in these 5 years itself. So something needs to be done. And if it's going to take some kind of agreement between these big powers, if they're going to be able to, twist the arms of regional powers and create some drawdown in Syria, any kind of approach should be welcomed by the world. Syria needs to have some semblance of breathing room. And I think if they can provide it, then we should welcome that.
That was Vijay Prashad, professor of international studies at Trinity College and author of 17 books, including The Darker Nations, A People's History of the Third World. For more analysis and commentary on the world's response to the latest ISIS terrorist attacks, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.